Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Done 10. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, even though they are about others. Only the devotee renunciates can give up talks about others completely. But because a household is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. Right? Because, in other words, the sannyasi has no one else to talk about, technically. Right? You know, so if there's something in service. But here the householder, then he has other members of the family and things connected with the family to talk about. Right? So the idea is that means, of course, is there's the, you know, the two levels of talking about, meaning, one meaning that, you know, that they're talking at all. Right? Sannyasi doesn't have family members to talk about. So you could say he's not talking at all. Right? The other is that one is talking about aspects connected, but it's connected to Krishna. So in that way, then it's not talking about, right? But here, as we discussed before, is that there's interactions that are just necessary because of the relationship, right? And people are in these relationships because of their attachments or bodily identification, right? So there will be some connection there of discussions. But the idea is one should be seeing how much is possible to connect that to the Lord. Yes.
Sometimes it seems difficult to see where it kind of shifts. You're talking about devotional service, maybe you have some seva or something, but actually you're just talking about the activity.
Well, yeah, I mean, so that would be favorable discussions. Right, it's about the activity, but it's not necessarily, in one sense, direct. Now, if you're remembering that the activity is for the service and that, but otherwise you're getting into the service, then you're going to use that to perform service. So, the idea is that when we are completely, and at all times, completely absorbed in Krishna, that's the ideal. If there's any moments that are not, those should be removed. Right, because we see until one comes to the platform of prema, that element is always part of the process. Right? You know, in other words, we're taking these principles of the devotional process that go through the whole process, but we're applying it to this case where we are. Right? So one can say, oh, it doesn't matter, it's only a little bit. But it does matter, because on the platform of bhava, just a little bit of not thinking of Krishna is already too much. Right? You know, and especially when you see the gopis, that the moment that the eye blinks and they can't see Krishna, they're already complaining that that's too much. Right? So that means their absorption is complete. That's what we're trying to get to. So at our stage now, we'll have our way of applying that, but we should never deal with the process as if where we are now is fine and great and, oh, that's as good as it gets or anything. No, it's always, this is just before the next step. But the principle is always the same. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in other words, that it's service connected to Krishna. You're discussing it even though if you may not be thinking about it or its connection to Krishna, you're just absorbed in the particular activity because of our own natural conditioning and interest in that subject. But the point is that knowledge, you know, has been and will be used in Krishna's service. So it will still have that beneficial effect, but it won't have as much effect as if we're talking about it not because of our conditioning, but because of the service to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, it's subtle, but it has a difference. So that's the idea, is we know all these levels so we can tell then where something is at. Right? It's no use saying, oh, you're just fine, and then that's it. Because the point is how do you define fine? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. Then it becomes subjective.
Yeah.
And everybody has their opinion and everything like that. And you can have a lot of heated arguments over what fine is.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So it's... Okay. So in other words, you know, we're saying is that there should be no topics. Yeah. You know, in other words, if we have no connection with anything material, then we have no discussions about anything on the material platform. All right? But if we're connected to things on the material platform, then we are to connect those to Krishna. Then it becomes fine. Right? That's the idea, is that that's there. So the idea is that if we don't have to talk about anything mundane, that's better. But if we do, then see that it's connected to Krishna. So it's not that you can't talk about other things, but they should be connected. Right? So therefore, the household engaged in earning, saving, protecting, maintaining the family. So he may be talking about these things. You may hear two grihasthas talking about these things. But the point is the quality of the conversation depends on its connection to Krishna, not that they're talking in those subjects. Right? So it's not that it's fine to talk those subjects, or it's complete nonsense to talk those subjects. The point is if you need, you talk about it. If you don't, why would you? Right? And if you need, then see that it connects to Krishna. Right? So there's always that, right? Does that make sense? Because we always have, you know, what's, you know, perfection, what's absolute, you know, disgusting, and then, you know, as far as we're concerned, that's it. No, but then there's a very big space in between. So the point is the more you talk about mundane things not connected to Krishna, the worse it is. The more you talk about a connection to Krishna, the better it is. Right? If there's no need to talk about a volume of them, why, you know, then you talk about less, that's better. If there's no need to talk about it, you still talk about it, that's not as good. Does that make sense? So it's just that simple. The closer it is towards perfection, the better it is, the farther away it is, the it's not. And then you also have to see what direction it's going. Right? It's closer to perfection, but going away from perfection, that's not so good. You know? It should be going towards Krishna. But this thing is that, when all one's material activities are related to with Krishna, then even this unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and part of devotional service in relation to Krishna. So, it is material activities that have been related to Krishna. Right? That's the idea. It's not that it's spiritual. No, it's material that's related to Krishna. Therefore, it becomes part of devotional service. Right? It doesn't become devotional service. It becomes part of devotional service. The devotion is the connection to Krishna.
So does it count as indirect devotional service?
Not necessarily. But it's making the subtlety here is that it's still the element that we are distinguishing between what is the actual devotion and what's the medium. Right? Because the medium becomes a part of the devotional service. But we have to remember it's still just the medium. Because you could say if it's devotional service, then that's what you have to do. Right? But this is, you don't have to do it. Is something that if you're doing it, connected to Krishna. So the connection is what's the devotion. You know what I'm saying? Well, I collect all my money to Krishna. Great. But someone else is serving Krishna without using money as the medium. So it's not that it's therefore the process. It's part of the process. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Cooking for Krishna, that's devotion. Cooking a potato for Krishna, the potato is part of the process. It's not that the potato is the devotional service. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, Upayunjita, as it's worthy, use it for Krishna.
As it's worthy, use it for Krishna. Here, the emphasis is on the using it,
right.
Not the worthiness
right.
So much. Because what it's pointing out is that Pajalpa means discussing worldly matters, just discussions. You know, you're in the material world, so anything discussed about what's going on around you that you can perceive with the senses, right? Then that is Pajalpa. But there are, so one avoids Pajalpa. That's all. But within that, there are topics that aren't, how you say, that aren't a problem if they're connected. Right? So that's the emphasis. In other places, the conversation about would be about the worthiness of something. So therefore, the more it's in line with the ideal and the traditional, that's more worthiness. The farther away it is, then the less worthy it is. But the point is the real test is the principle. Will it work? You know what I'm saying? You know, you have this nice tungsten steel hammer with the, you know, the rubber grip and all the different things, and that may be the most worthy. But you could also, you know, pick up a rock, and it would do pretty good job. You may not get it flush with the top of the wood. You know, you may make a few dings in the wood, so, you know, someone doing, you know, furniture and all that probably wouldn't use a rock, you know, unless they wanted to get that old, you know, Neanderthal furniture look, you know, like that. So the idea is that but it still works. It's technically not worthy, but it'll work. You know what I'm saying? But then to argue, you know, the rock's just as good as the hand, that's a waste of time. That's what the modern, oh, it's all equal, everything's good, nice, see the bright side, all that. That's all those things, though well meant, are complete childishness. Yes. Does that make sense? You know, of course, we figure that once we grow up, the childishness goes away, but it doesn't. You have to train it to go away. You know what I'm saying? Just because you don't see it as often, because before you're always, you know, in the kitchen, or, you know, crying about the cookie jar. So now you're not in the kitchen crying about the cookie jar, you're crying about something else, you know. So you think it's not the same, but it's the same. So, and also he's saying here, even his unavoidable talk means if you avoid it, it would be improper. You know what I'm saying? You know, the grihastha is so Krishna consciously renounced and, you know, his kid is having an emotional breakdown, but it's over something of stupid attachment, so therefore he's not going to get involved in such mundanity. You know, the kid should just, you know, make a bridge, get over it, grow up, you know, all these different kinds of things. Yeah, chant Hare Krishna. Like that. And so he'll figure he's being the great Krishna conscious grihastha. No, he's not. He may be being a nice Krishna conscious renunciate, but why is he grihastha then? If he wants to behave like that and not get involved, don't get involved. Great. Don't get married. Don't have kids. Right? But he is married. He has kids. Therefore, it's unavoidable. He sits down and talks about these things. You know what I'm saying? But he's doing it because he wants to make them understand so that they can be more Krishna conscious. But the kid's just looking for some emotional support. Right? So that's unavoidable. So that's been the problem with the past. Not the renunciation. Not the Krishna consciousness. It's that they don't know what's unavoidable and what's avoidable. Right? Does that make sense? He should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone, right? It means, let us say, you're discussing with an equal, and you're talking about another equal, right? That you're working together, and, you know, the person didn't cooperate in this way, you know, should be, you know, work more with the team, not so independently. And the other guy's, okay, like that, how can we work it out? Okay, that's not detrimental. Right? Now let's say there's a junior there. Now to them, this person is an authority. Right? So for them to hear the conversation, that's detrimental. You may think it's not. So like parents all the time talk about authorities in front of the children. And because, you know, we talking about this and the child is non-different from me, therefore the child hearing about this is also fine. And then they wonder why in the future the child doesn't accept their authority. You know, so then that's detrimental. So no, it shouldn't be bad for somebody. It may be good for you, but not for someone else. You know what I'm saying? So does that make sense? He should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna conscious family. So whatever little is necessary. In other words, don't not more. Whatever is necessary, you talk. Whatever is not necessary, you don't talk. Right? But at the same time, is don't look at this in a, how you say, a linear, regulated fashion. You know, that, okay, every day we can talk 3 minutes, you know, about, like that. Is there'll be days when all you'll talk about is others, and, you know, that's only a little, right? And there'll be other times when you won't talk about anybody else at all, you know? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. But it means how less you can, that much you do. You don't encourage it. Right? Does that make sense? You're encouraging relationships and development, but you're not encouraging useless talk. Right? But the useless talk may be necessary in cultivating the relationship. You understand? If it's necessary, it's used. If it's not necessary, it's not used. Does that make sense? You know, the husband's there, he's chanting, and his wife is chanting, and she's really absorbed. And then he remembers some gossip that it was there. He doesn't say it at that time. It's unnecessary, right? The wife is absorbed in her chanting. Right? Another time when she's talking gossip, that's when he uses it. Does that make sense? Right? Yes.
There seems to be one more. There is a rule and there are
exceptions.
Exceptions. So, renunciates. Managers, they will also talk about others.
But it's only in connection with the service. You know what I'm saying? And the service there would be direct. They're maybe engaging their direct, indirect aspect of their occupational nature of management. You know what I'm saying? But the service itself is direct. But taking care of a family is not direct devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not inherently. Managing the temple is directly devotional service. You may manage it and not think of Krishna at all. You know, just like the name in Krishna non-different, you can chant the holy name and be completely inattentive. But it's still the name. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But taking care of a family on its own is not devotional service. But you can connect it to devotional service. Then it becomes a part of devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's the distinction. One, chanting the holy name is devotional service. You know, taking care of the family, if done in connection to Krishna, becomes part of devotional service. But it's only part as long as it's connected. That's where we're making the distinction here. So, therefore, things that would normally not be considered useful in devotional service, because they're not direct devotional service. So indirect devotional service is only called devotional service because it's connected. Otherwise, the indirect would be dropped also. It was not that taking care of the family is indirect, you know, and then there's no, it's just, it's material. Connecting it to Krishna, then it becomes indirect devotional service. So that becomes a part of the devotional process. So he's taking care of his family, he has his sadhana, he has his business, you know, he has his other social things. So these are all become part because he's connected them all. But his sadhana, that's direct. Does that make sense? You know, if he and his family are sitting there and doing kirtan, that's direct. But that he's engaging his family members, that's indirect. You know what I'm saying? But that they are all chanting, that's direct. You know what I'm saying? Because they consider, why them? Why not the neighbor? Why aren't the neighbors here at the kirtan? Because they're not part of the family, that's why. So it wasn't that he's just catching people. If there are no family, he's just finding some people, getting there and chanting Hare Krishna, that's direct. Does that make sense? So, for indirect devotional service, you get direct benefit because it's connected to devotional service. But its definition, it's only devotional service because you've taken your attachment and connected it to the Lord. But if you didn't connect it, it's just your attachment. You understand? It's do we catch this? It's a subtle point. It overlaps. But it makes a distinction on how to work with it. So, here he uses the term necessary, unavoidable. Not necessary, but unavoidable, right? Necessary means you need to. Unavoidable, right? So, unavoidable discussion. So that way, then the renunciates don't get disturbed. Or the grihastha doesn't become too renounced, artificially renounced, right? But at the same time, it's put into this category, because it actually technically, for the soul, is not necessary. But because of his conditioning, he's involved there, so therefore he connects that to the Lord. Does that make sense? So then it becomes devotion. Right? So that way then no one gets too renounced. At the same time as they're involved with it, they don't become too comfortable with it and too relaxed. You know, it's not because it's unavoidable then where you talk all kinds of stuff. No, you talk just how much needs to be. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like we were saying. Let's say you're sitting with the kid. Now, you know, most of the time they only are able to sit for 20 minutes and chant. Then they got to go out and do something else, right? You know, it bothered you in the beginning, but, you know, you've kind of worked out things that you can go and do, and you wanted to do those anyway, so let's do them at that time. You know what I'm saying? So now you're sitting there again and chanting, and 20 minutes is up, but the kid's still absorbed in chanting. So now if you say, come on, let's go, then that will be unnecessary. Because the reason for it was simply because of the child's lack of attachment, and your attachment to be there with them, and then your attachment to be efficient about, you know, engaging your time. Because that time is actually just for japa. So it's not important that you're doing something else. But if that's all the more they can chant, and by going and doing something else they could continue chanting, then it becomes, you know, unavoidable. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to distinguish between, you know what I'm saying? Let's say you go and sit down. You know, you chant, then at 6 o'clock you go and do your email, right? This is very, how you say it? Sorry if it's too theoretical, this example. So, but now, you know, sometimes you can spend hours doing email, right? And then there's a time you're doing a lot of email, right? Things are happening and all that. So you spend, you know, 2 hours doing that. And then, you know, you get it to class. You know, they've already finished the verse and everything, and he's just started talking. But it's just the beginning of the talk, right? So you haven't really missed anything, right? You know, because all that other stuff's just, you know, ritual. So like that. So that 2 hours, and that happens over weeks, okay? Now let us say those 2 weeks are up, okay? And you're not complaining that you're spending the 2 hours. You know, you're comfortable with it. You know, it's not, you know. But now let's say you go the next day, and you go on email, and there's one letter that all you have to do is say, yeah, it's okay at 5 o'clock. Now, will you get back up, go into the temple and chant and do the rest of the program? Or is there a good chance you'll find something else to do on the internet or with your computer for 2 hours?
Facebook.
Huh? Facebook. Got a point there. You got a point. YouTube. Does that make sense? That's the meaning of where it means. That's where it's not necessary, right? The others, you need to do it for the service. It's unavoidable. It's not important to do it at that time. You could do it at another time, but that time no one's going to bother you. Why? Because everybody's doing spiritual stuff. That's why they're not going to bother you. Well, if you try to do it from 10 to 12, then every 10 minutes you get a phone call, you get a this and that. So it annoys you that I'm doing this work. I just want to do this work. Get it done with. Right? And no one follows the Vedic thing. The Vedic thing is from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. That's when you do this stuff. You ever heard of that? Because it's also a time. Nobody's around at that time. It's everything's like that. You go out and do something you can do. You don't go out, it doesn't, no one bothers. So that's the time to take care. In the Vedic thing, that's when the Brahmins would take care of, you know, all these, you know, like, you know, ordinary dealings. It would all be done at that. The king would go look at the armies, check the, you know, the arsenals, the stables, all those things that are, yeah, you just ordinary day-to-day stuff, not something out of the ordinary. You know, it's not like court. That's his service as the court. But to do that, he needs to have his armies and that sort of checks. So the Brahma's doing his puja and his training and teaching. That afternoon time, that's when he does. You understand? Like that. So that's not known. So nobody uses that time. Like that. But does that make sense? So to be able to tell the difference that I'm doing this because, but if you bring this up, maybe we're here, you know, and we've been hearing this and that, and we're laughing about it, but I guarantee if I brought this up cold in a room full of managers and senior men, it would not be received well. Huh? Theoretically, means theoretically it wouldn't be perceived well, or theoretically I'd survive. There is a chance I could survive by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, right? So the idea is that because then it would immediately be no, it's service, I'm doing that, it may be. Like we said, if the person's renunciate, they're not doing anything. It is temple service. It is actually direct service. But the reason that they're doing it at that time is not because of something direct. It's because of connecting their conditioner. Does that make sense? Yes. 4 to 6. That's Manu mentions that. That's when you deal with ordinary stuff. That's when you call the plumber and do, you know, all that kind of jazz, you know. All the stuff, recharge your phone, you know, all those things that you gotta do as regular stuff, you know, pay the bills, you know, go through the tax things. That's the time of the day for it. Because the morning's for sadhana, then you have your occupation. You know, then there's the lunch and all, then there's that. Because then in the evening, that's the time of the family, social things and all that. So you shouldn't do that in the evening. And it won't fit into the morning, right? You don't want to fit it into your sadhana. So you don't want to take it out of sadhana, occupation, or family life. So that's a time, it could be anything. You know what I'm saying? Because you've already, before that, spent some time with the family. After lunch, there's a little time, taking a little rest. But now it's time to be active again. You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, between the, you know, afternoon artik and evening artik, that gap, that's the time for that stuff. Because evening artik, again, that starts the spiritual or, you know, interaction with family and like that. Yes.
And what about the aspect of sinlessness and reactions?
Sinlessness
cases?
And reactions means okay. Sinlessness means there won't be any bad reaction, but it doesn't mean that the reaction to the from the transformation of the medium you're dealing with won't happen. Does that make sense? I take the potato, I put it in the boiling water, I come back after 20 minutes. What happens? Right? The potato gets cooked, right? So whether you're doing that, but if I do that for Krishna, is it sinful or sinless? And if I do it not for Krishna, then full. Okay. So that's the point. It's sinless or sinful, but the potato still gets cooked.
How does it apply to speaking?
How does it apply to?
To talking about others.
Talking about others. You're still going to get the material result of, you know, the family members being happy or not happy or this or that or, you know, whatever, all the different interactions and transformations are on the material platform. That will happen. Does that make sense? It's not because you're raising your child to be in Krishna consciousness that he still doesn't yell and scream and get sick at night and, you know, have nightmares. You understand? But for the materialist, then it's a complete waste of time. He wants to be happy, and this is what he's dealing with. So how is that an improvement?
Yeah,
That's just Maya's trick, right? But for the devotee, he's involved in that environment, but there's no sin to it. You understand? He's just said these same points that he's saying here. Earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family. Right? And then you have the, you know, the famous verse of, you know, the, how you say, Griya Sutta Sutta Bear. You know, that one about, you know, the materialist is attached to the place of his birth and his family and his house and all these different things. So it's sinful. Right? But here it's connected to Krishna, so it's not sinful. But it doesn't mean he doesn't have to pay the mortgage and that, you know, the drain on the, what do you call it? What are those called? It's been a long time. You know, when the roof comes down, yeah, that little metal thing that catches the water. The gutter, yeah, the gutters don't rust or need painting or they're not leaking or, you know, that the neighbor's dog just, you know, dug a hole in your lawn. Those things still go on, but there's no sin. You know what I'm saying? So all material, that's the bomb we think, because it's sinless, there'll be no disturbance. No, the same disturbances are there, but they become part of the devotional process. So now they become opportunity to become humble and tolerant and all these other things. Well, before they're just reasons to make you upset and angry and all that. And even if you become humble and tolerant, it doesn't matter, because as soon as things go good anyway, you'll drop the humble and tolerance. So it's a temporary manifestation, right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Just like this. I mean, is that vivid enough? You need something very vivid. Okay.
And applying it to managing and talking about others and sinful and reactions?
Because you're managing for Krishna, so therefore Krishna will protect you. But because of one's attachment, that one has is dealing in a particular area, and therefore, you know, this guy's got to move out and this guy's here. It's not that it's not going to give reactions, that therefore now these guys are going to make a party here and these guys are going to be supportive. And it's not that the political field won't remain. You know what I'm saying? Yudhishthir is sinless, but still there's Duryodhana. That's because that goes with the field. You deal in administration, then you got to put up with politics. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so whatever the field, then you have to deal with everything that goes along with that. Right? Means, the dog slobbers. The dog has fleas. The dog drops hair all over the place. Right? The dog barks. So whether you have it out in the lawn and it's protecting Krishna's house or not, it does the same thing. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is the same situations and difficulties will be there. Nothing changes. You know, it's not like devotee babies, you don't have to change diapers. They cry enough that you can feel, you know, the interactiveness, but when you want to go to sleep, then they stop crying. Does that make sense? No, it's just the way it is. But there's no sin. That's all. But the environment's the same. So that what he's pointing out here, we're taking this particular angle because that's this aspect is being brought out here in the Prajalpa, that Prajalpa is technically not necessary. But there are unavoidable aspects that if they're connected to Krishna, then there's no sin.
And sin we will take as something detrimental to Krishna consciousness.
Yes, sin is detrimental to Krishna consciousness. Sinful, in other words, sinful keeps you here. Right? So even the person is very pious, it's still, we can say it's a sinful life. So when we're talking, generally when the Bhagavatam is talking about the gross materialist who, you know, totally absorbed in his family and his money and his emotions, they're talking about a pious follower of the Vedas. Generally, why are they going to talk about some tribal out in the forest, you know? What is that going to do for, as an example, for the follower of the person who's reading the book, right? They are reading Shastra. So who's going to be reading Shastra? That sinful person? Or the pious person? It's the pious person who's reading it. But the point is that piety, if it's not connected to the Lord, it's sinful. But the pious person, automatically, when you say sinful, will think of somebody else. So at least, if nothing else, it keeps him from doing that. It keeps him in his pious position. Like a lock keeps honest people honest. Right? You know what I'm saying? That's what it does. So these comments keep people who would tend towards piety, but also may have a tendency towards sin, keeps them pious. But the sinful people, what do they care that says that, you know, all this stuff is there? So what?
So there's a chance of running into sinful reactions where the science of connection is not properly followed.
Yeah, where the science of connection is not followed. Yeah. You know? But you have the element that one is a devotee, and one may have one's weaknesses in the practice, so Krishna still protects you. Right? He carries what you have, I mean, carries what you lack, preserves what you have. Right? So then looking at the bigger picture. But it's not that in that area where you've done wrong that you're not going to get a reaction in that medium. You know what I'm saying? You don't, let's say, you're an authority, you don't deal with somebody properly. But it's not that in the future some authority won't deal badly with you. Right? That's the reaction. But at the same time, is the protection is that you can see it in Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? If you completely adjust it, there may be no need for the reaction. But that's a whole different discussion, right? Here the point is that the being in the material world is unnecessary. Therefore, anything to do with the material world is unnecessary. But there is much within the world that is unavoidable. So the devotee, by engaging in the Lord's service, then there's no sin. It becomes part of the sinful, part of the devotional process. Yes.
There's many times we're asked how are you, or which country.
If you're not Japanese, then just say fine.
And which country are you from?
Then you say whichever one you think, whatever it means, depends upon how serious you want to take the people or not. You know, otherwise you want to have some fun to say a country that, you know, no one can pronounce. You know, like, you know, Liechtenstein or something like, who's ever heard of it? Like, you know, it's like that.
Yes, it's how to deal on that. You know, so, like somebody maybe wants to deal with you on that level. And then you can say, yes, I am.
Means how much it means. In other words, if there's an opening in that to interact and get into Krishna consciousness, then if it's pleasant and all that, it starts off, then you can bring it to that. These are just ways from, you know, how you say, one entity to start an interaction with another. Because otherwise, what does he ask about, you know? Hi, you know?
Have you read something about
them? Yeah, have you read anything, you know, what size shoes you wear? You know, what's your opinion on mothers-in-laws? You know, on Tuesday. I mean, you know, how do you open the conversation? So you ask, you know, how they're doing, talk about the weather, but not in Japan. In Japan, you only talk about the weather. You don't ask a Japanese how they are, because they're so analytical. They go, how am I? Well, I hate my job, I hate my boss, I hate all the people I work with, I'm having a problem at home with my wife, my kids hate me, and so it's a really things like that. I'd love to run off, I have to go to work every day, it's 2 hours on the train down, and 2 hours back, and it's packed, and it's sometimes really hard to get, and it's stuffy, and I'm not fine, and this is crazy, and why am I doing this anyway? And so you have a meltdown, so you don't ask how they're doing. That's just the etiquette. You just talk about the weather. You just say, oh, nice day today. Very rainy today. You know, and that's crushed the conversation.
For psychiatrists, it would pay off.
For a psychiatrist. Oh, and to watch the meltdown would be good. You could probably sell tickets and make money, right? You know, like that. While it's going on, then you call everybody.
I could be be a poll on how long it would take.
Hmm?
There could be a poll on how long it
would take. How it would take, yeah, yeah. Then you'd need an Aussie.
Yeah.
Like that, to do the bets. Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, when you are like presenting books to an audience, and they sometimes bring in like particular subject matter which you are not expert about, and I guess what I'm trying to ask you is that, is it okay for us to engage ourselves into like certain news, for example, about all aspects of what's happening?
If you're going to use it. The point is if it's something that you can see using, then what's the problem? If you know that you go there and there's all these kind of topics they ask about, you don't know which one, so if you're up to date on them, then you can make your comment. You know, like that. So it's not that it's not that that's what makes the devotional service go nicely. Like that, because you can also deflect. You know what I'm saying? We have a tendency, we're asked a question about a certain thing, we feel obliged to answer on that. But the reason that they're asking on that is generally another reason, purpose anyway. So they're trying to get their own purposes done by asking this question. But it's not that you can't be getting your purpose done by answering yours. If you look at sometimes the conversations with Prabhupada, they're asking one question, he's giving a totally different answer. You know, Prabhupada will come up and they'll ask him, you know, so Swamiji, you know, because, you know, why did you come to, you know, our country? You know, yes, because Krishna consciousness, this and that, the need of the hour and all that. And then he'll stop and then he'll say, so Swamiji, how many followers do you have? And then he'll keep going. Yes, so the human life is meant for it. Like this, he'll just keep going with, if there's more point, he'll just keep going. Because the things are irrelevant, you know. You know, or you just deflect it off. Swamiji, why you wear this color, this, you know, like that, and, you know, it's like that, you know, it's like that. It says, no, it's just the color that's used, like that. And so then therefore, so then it could be any color. He said, yes, because then he'll drop the conversation. You know? And he said, oh, it could be any color then, yes? You know, then Prabhupada said, yes, saffron. So he, you know, he's got him off the topic. Otherwise, why saffron? Why not this? Why not, you know, chartreuse? My grandmother really likes chartreuse. You know, like that. And does that make sense? Okay. He should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna conscious family. Because as we saw, the renunciates don't need to talk about others. But the family members have a tendency to talk about others. But the others are who are connected to them. It's the relationships that they're talking about, not management. Right? It's that they've affected them in some way. It's like, you know, so many times it says, oh, you know, they said this and they made me feel really bad and the husband's thinking, well, what do we care about them anyway and this and that? Why you let them affect you and all this and that? The point is it's not a matter of, because why you let them affect you then makes you feel that you've done something wrong because you let them. No, it's a matter of you are affected. So then there's talk about it. Does that make sense? But if it's outside the family thing, there's no need. Right? No need. Of course, if you applied this, you should not talk about others without reason. If you applied this, then that would means basically in the world all pubs would shut down. Right? You know, there would be no pubs, clubs, any of these things. They'd all shut down. They'd have nothing to talk about, right? You know? Right. So without reason, but this reason should be connected to Krishna, right? Of course, it's going to have some connection to your conditioning, but it shouldn't be that it's just the conditioning. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes when we preach, we meet people, they come and they just want to talk,
They just want to talk, but at least they're willing to talk to you.
But sometimes they just talk for too long, and then other people, they pass by, and then you can't approach those.
But you can't tell what those people look like?
No, I don't.
Isn't that normal? These, how many categories do you have? 9, or how many do you use? Like that. You know, you have so many categories of people. So with this person, you use these lines. That person, use that line.
Like some old ladies, then they look interested, and but up to like half an hour. they don't take the
food. Okay, well, half an hour. I think it depends upon the, yeah. Where are you from?
I was born in Slovakia, but I preach in Belgium.
Oh, okay.
You get that in the U.S. with the Christians, you know? Somebody comes up to you and like, so what about this and this? And you think about this person is interested, and 20 minutes later, so what do you think about Jesus?
Yeah,
yeah. But you get trained up to kind of listen to the questions. And
yeah, then you know the line of thought.
You know exactly what to say.
Okay. But then you should preempt them on that.
Yeah.
Before they get to the Jesus voice, you should pull it on them.
Exactly, instead of doing that.
You know,
it's like after
No, I mean really found him. You know. We looked under the rocks.
There was one who in Brazil, everybody thought he was a little nutcase, you know, but he was very smart. And the Christians came to him, and everybody got caught up for at least 10 minutes. They were very, and then finally they would preach. And then he said, the person said, hey, what about you? Wonderful, where's the temple? Give me the address tomorrow, I'll go there immediately. So we can give the address, finished.
You're gone, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's Aikido, you just go with it. You just go on. Yeah. And one other devotee, they come up, have you found Jesus? And they go, I didn't know he was lost. I can help you look for him if you want.
I said to a bunch of really rude Christians, actually. They really think they saw we have to disturb this guy's whatever he's doing here. So this lady came, could you look in heaven? Like, I need to talk to people. Why is this question? So finally I said, no. I said, why are too many Christians there? She just felt so hurt.
Yeah, it was boring. Okay, I guess boring. How many talking lions can you deal with? So without a reason, if there's some reason or something, someone's done something in the community, you want to protect your family members from, you might be talking about it, but not about how they're bad or this, that, about how what is going on is not good and how it's one shouldn't get involved and how one can avoid it. So it's not about the people, it's about the activity. Right? Because that's the main thing. The people aren't the problem, it's the activity. You understand?
Is the quality of
Dira. Sober. Yeah, very good. Yeah, you'd have to be sober to do it. But same time, as the soberness isn't dry. So that's the thing, is the devotee is sober, but he's poetic. Mm. You know, he's enthusiastic. So he has all these other nice qualities. You know, so it all balances nicely. Moreover, when a guru enlightens his disciple on some topic, then unless he occasionally talks about others, his instruction may not be clear. Right? Because you have to put it in a context that it means something to them. Right? When previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, there is merit in such talk, not fault. Right? As Sukadev Goswami said, like you see in the conversations, they say, you know, ask a question. Oh, this one was talking about that, and so they'll discuss. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:1-4. The lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Right? They're experienced. They've been out there. They see all, you know, everybody around them, what's happening to them, you know, and especially as you get older. You know, before it was, is, you know, you read about, you know, something happening in another country or the other side of the country or this or that, you know. And then as you grow up, then things start happening around. But they're the other side of town, people you've never heard of and that. But as you go, then it starts to get closer and closer. You know what I'm saying? The older you get, then it starts to get really close, you know, like that. Until it gets supremely close. And then it's you. Although Sukadeva Goswami talks about the materialist in order to instruct his disciple, he is not considered a prajalpi. Therefore, such activity should be considered beneficial. Right? He's talking about them, but he's talking about the principle. The problem is they're envious. They waste their time on non-Krishna conscious activities. That's the problem. He's not talking about, you know, Sam over here, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Unless one speaks in this way while instructing and while concluding a subject, there is no benefit for oneself or others, because no one will understand it. That's why Purana, it has to be put into a context, right? A useful context. You know? Therefore, when the previous acharyas have personally set example and taught others, how will we be benefited by acting contrary to their instruction? And if one discusses in this way the improper behavior current in a religious sect or amongst the general public, then such talk is not adverse to devotional service, because you're talking it for the purpose of devotional service. You know, but if it's just a matter of talking, those guys are so attached, you know, and that's where it ends, then what's the point? But when it's pointed out that this is a problem, because they're attached, they can't even see their own destruction. Right? And then they'll be born again, have to go through all that. Well, maybe that's it. That's who they should talk to, right?
That's sometimes a problem, because although this the attraction in the beginning may be mistaken with aversion, and then it may just, aversion will manifest itself as describing the fall downs.
Yeah, well, that's why it is. That's why we were discussing before. We gave the difference between when the Bhagavatam describes, you know, it's like the Bhagavatam is discussing Puru Ravas with Urvasa. Right? And so it's a very major event. It's from that then came the start of the Treta Yuga. He was the one who started Yajna because of that incident. But it deals in a few verses. It's surprisingly small. Right? So all these different elements is that when the sage has a problem, then half a verse or one verse talks about it. You don't have to discuss the rest. But if Mahabharata talks about this half a page, you know, how the tongue came out, how it rolled out, how far did it roll, how much saliva was on the tongue, you know, how it glistened in the sun, you know, just like that, you know. And all that's there because you're dealing with the need for more prajalpa. Does that make sense? So the point is how much is necessary to make the point, that's fine. Now, if you have to discuss more to get the point across, that's all right. But if you don't have to, then why use more? You know what I'm saying? Well, that would be the... Yeah, it has to be connected, and it's only how much is necessary to connect, right? If to hang a picture I need one nail, I don't need to put 10 in the wall. You could say, well, I just wanted to make sure, you know, like that. Yeah, okay. It falls off one, it'll be on another.
I just hammer it through the picture.
That could also work, hey? But then use the ones with the double head. It means the nail comes and then there's one here and then the nail goes again and there's another.
Oh, like that. Okay.
Yeah, that way it'll only go in so far and you can still pull it out if you want to move the picture.
Yeah, if you want to move the picture.
The practicing devotee normally discusses ancient history in the association of devotees. Occasionally, they talk about non-devotees. Such talk is always auspicious and favorable to devotional service. But those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments, like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. Right? So in other words, the prajalpa, if it's in connection with devotion, it's not a problem. But if it's in connection with envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, then it's going to be a problem.
Only devotees should speak,
yes.
Only devotees?
Yeah, only devotees should speak. Everyone else should not speak. Because that's the whole point. You're not supposed to speak about others, right? Because that's prajalpa. So all prajalpas should stop. But there are ones that are either unavoidable, and then you connect to Krishna, or are beneficial. Right? So that means only the devotees are connecting things to the Lord. You know, or like that. So technically only the devotees talk. If only the devotees spoke, then the world would probably be a lot better, right? You know, think of all the trees we'd save, you know, like that. No? Yeah? Well, you might have a problem down in your place because then, you know, the jungle take every place, you know, chopping them all down to make magazines and stuff. You got something? Someone had something. Oh, okay. I knew there was a hand somewhere in that direction. Did we miss one paragraph?
The great sage.
The great sage, my trick. Oh, where did we get speak about others and then there was something about speak about? There was some word that connected it. Yeah, no, we missed the whole section. Even if someone talks about a particular person, there is no fault. In Srimad Bhagavatam 4.14.29, Maitreya Muni, the foremost devotee, spoke about Vena Maharaj in this way. The great sage Maitreya continued. Thus the king who became unintelligent due to his sinful life and deviation from the right path, became actually bereft of all good fortune. He could not accept the requests of the great sages, which the sages put before him with great respect, and therefore he was condemned. Sri Maitreya Rishi needed to speak about others in this way. He spoke to his audience to instruct them. This is not prajalpa. The practicing devotee normally discusses ancient history in the association of devotees. Because right, ancient history means from the scriptures. Right? Because anything else that's not ancient is modern. Doesn't matter how old. Like, we'll take Greeks to be ancient history, right? But for the Veda, that's not ancient. Ancient means, you know, what's in the Shastra. You know, what's 5,000 years. So it's modern if it's not connected to the scriptures. Debate, so here is, so it may be generic, like householders as a class, or it may be specific, Vena. But it should be in connection to the point being made in devotional service, right? How to practice. In other words, we understand here is that if you're a leader and don't properly respect authority, then there's always going to be problem. So not only was it that he's non-devotional, but even that could be left. Because at least, okay, he's not a devotee, but he's doing the job of a king. But the king has to listen to superiors, listen to the Brahmins. When he stopped doing that, then his position as a king was no longer of any value. Because the first thing that Manu describes when talking about the Varna Dharma of Kshatriyas is his being under the protection of Brahmins, listening to Brahmins, being trained by Brahmins. That's the first thing. When that's clear, then it gets into everything else. But if that's not in place, then don't even bother with the rest. Yeah. Yes.
And it says, occasionally they talk about non-devotees. Such talk is always suspicious and favorable. There's no way to talk about non-devotees that is not beneficial?
I mean, just to talk about them, that, you know, this and that, if it's just discussions, then it's not benefit. How is one benefiting?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. One is not benefiting, right? It says such talk is always auspicious and favorable to the Christians.
Means here. It's in the context of what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're discussing about, so Maitreya Rishi, the practicing devotee, normally discusses ancient history. Occasionally talk about non-devotees. Right? So he's trying to point out is that they're discussing about non-devotees in connection with that ancient history as a example, you know, of application.
Yeah, okay.
So then that's always auspicious. Okay. Otherwise we could say, oh no, he's making these points, you know, why they're criticizing, don't say this, because you do have sometimes that people will say.
Yeah.
Talking about Ravana, for example.
Yeah, talking about Ravana.
Hmm.
You know, so the idea is that if it's connected to Krishna, it's fine. If it's not connected, it's pretty useless.
Okay. Yeah, I misunderstood.
Debate arises only from a desire. Well, okay, so then that was the next. So that was debate. What was it? Where was that list? Okay, useless talks, arguments, gossip. So that was gossip. Debates, fault-finding. So that was gossip. In other words, it's gossip saying Vena, he was, you know, a nonsense and he didn't listen to the Brahmins and all that. But it's in relationship to devotional service and trying to understand the principle. Therefore, it becomes useful. So now the next prajalpas is debates. Right? Debate arises only from a desire for conquest. It is extremely abominable. Fault-finding arises only from imposing one's own bad habits on others. Okay, debates and fault-findings. Okay, so a debate is because you want to win. You want to establish it. It's not so much that the truth is what's important. It's that you want to win. They'll make it sound like it's the truth, because if I say, yeah, I'm going to start, means you've said that, I'm going to start an argument, you know, a debate here because I want to win, you know. I just feel that you're too confident in saying this, I just have to win. I can't let anybody, you know, everyone would go, well, what's that? That's stupid. The discussion would be about their need to win. But if I say, no, that's not wrong, that's not the truth, that's against the truth. So then people, oh, okay, this is a value. Yes.
Sometimes philosophical discussions are tinged with this debate.
Debate, yeah, you just have to win. So I think it's called didanda. Where it doesn't matter what you say as long as you win. So the person can even be speaking against his own philosophy. As long as he wins the argument, then that's okay.
I've observed rather more often that I think this is right, so this must be established. But then
that's the need for conquest. You know, the conquest, self-righteousness, we're superior. Means, why are the conquistadors going around the world?
To help,
because they just feel they have the right life and they have to teach all the, benefit all the savages of the world. And because the savages are so happy with the new lifestyle, then therefore we can plunder all the wealth of their country as, you know, and, you know, a token of their appreciation.
Just symbolic.
Symbolic, yeah. Token would actually mean it has some substance.
It's funny how often it works to agree with something else than what people said. But if you're in a heated argument and people are putting forth an argument, if you agree and then agree to something else than they actually said, it's scaring how often they accept that. How scary that is. I mean, you know what I mean?
Not exactly.
You're in a heated argument. Someone is
like,
out
like,
to
it's,
win.
It's like you're in a Turkish bath or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Sauna. Bikram yoga.
No, that's irrelevant. It could be. Yeah. Let's say, for argument's sake, it is.
Okay. Or two guys with their heads in an oven or something.
Yeah, okay. So just let the other, win the argument, but with your conclusion, actually. That works often.
Oh, okay. How would you let them win but give your conclusion?
So what you mean is, and then you bring your conclusion.
Oh, but you make it sound like
yeah,
it's
sound
them.
Yeah, sound like they came to that conclusion. Then actually, very often, exactly that's what
they mean. I'm going to try that. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah.
You use that?
I use it regularly.
Okay. Wow. Try that.
Sometimes people who are not so much operating on logic but just on emotions, they lack definitions.
Yeah.
So they will often try to use it unconsciously against some other arguments. We are presenting something logical and they will twist it according to their emotions and hope to you to come to agree because you cannot understand actually their modus operandi because they are functioning otherwise.
Okay, but if you present it in the tone of voice like they've won, mm-hmm. but you say your conclusion.
Oh, so, okay, like. it just dawned on you. Always for fun.
Okay. So do you wait to laugh until you've turned around and completely gone to the gun around the corner?
Yeah, I usually. It works better that way.
Okay, otherwise they might come back.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute.
Okay, it's okay. So you maintain the subtlety.
Yeah.
Okay, debate arises only from a desire for conquest. It doesn't say anything else. It is extremely abominable. Fault finding arises only from imposing one's own bad habits on others.
So Maharaj,
that's a good one.
Desire for conquest with passion and bad habits and ignorance?
Can be ignorance because one's bad habits are one's identity. You know, I find fault in that because that's you want to impose what you're doing on the other. Because if it's actually the quality is good, why you don't need to impose it? You're trying to help the other person. Like that. So even if what you're talking about may be good, but your need to impose it, then there's something underlying that's not. You know, even if the habit may be, but the attitude's wrong. But here it's generally it's like if you have somebody who's doing something wrong, but they're attached to it, and someone who's not doing something wrong, the tendency of the person who's doing something wrong will be to criticize the one who's not doing something wrong, right? So then it makes them look that they're okay. You know, say some other... Yeah, Keshava Keshava, he just wants to win. That's the thing. You know, but he's willing to work for it.
Yes. And so, remember that Charya is in which category?
It would be. There it's not so much of as a debate as it is that he just feels he's not trained. Right? There, it was more of. Yeah, it means you could probably say it was more of a fault finding, though well meant, but fault finding, in that he's a sannyasi of the Bharati line, which is a lower line, but he's of the Bhattacharya line. So, therefore, he could elevate himself to this higher, it would be socially better You know, and only because you see, just about anybody probably wouldn't care, but here's someone who looks, you know, all pious symptoms, very attractive, you know, so you're dealing with something of substance, so there's most likely very intelligent, and so he wants to teach him that higher understanding of Vedanta and all that, you know. And then, you know, the Lord, through humility, tricks him and shows him that he doesn't actually know what he's talking about. So that's
in a situation where, for example, somebody puts out a conclusion which was against the Vedas, some philosophy in a private talk situation, a private talk with you, so kind of, you know, you don't want to enter into debate in one sense or another, you know.
Yeah, but then you go to the move to the principle. The point is much of the time when somebody's, if you're talking about devotees.
Devotees always dealing with, you know, some yogis, non-devotees.
Yeah, but that you're going to them. They're not coming to you.
Yeah,
so you have some specific purpose. So, but the devotees, that then there'll be something that generates in them an issue coming from something based on authority, guru, sadhu, and shastra. But what it'll be a specific detail that's bothering them. But what's the point is to go to the principle of that point. Discussing the principle, then they'll see is what they're looking for is already there. You know what I'm saying? Because they're giving a detail of one thing and talking in their mind some nice quality. But what's happening is they're not catching the principle that connects that Vedic point to that quality they're looking for. Because to them, that particular detail, the connotation in their eyes is that it's another, it has a different result. Does that make sense? Let us say, yes, go ahead.
So he was discussing something and he was speaking about fundraising. And he said, actually, you know, every fool can, you know, decorate or, you know, speak or whatever. But the real, you know, the one who does devotional service is the one who raises the money.
Uh-huh.
He brought the example. So the one who, he brought the example of Brahma Bharishpur, so he is the one who's in the temple. Everybody else is kind of, you know, on the side doing the same, but he is the one who gets the table. The one who raises the money is the one who does the working service. Everybody else is kind of on the side. So.
Means then they use that example of Ambarish.
It was an actual conversation.
Okay, no, okay.
Yeah.
So then you do, you know, like what he was saying, and you just take it through, because you agree with it, then you're on the same situation. You're opposed, then it may not work out. But you go through it, you know, because then, see, as if you work beyond the general level of conversation, then there's nothing for the mind to catch on to be upset with. You know what I'm saying? It means only when you drop down into the secondary creation, then people have opinions. There's no opinion on the platform of primary creation. You understand? Because you're just dealing with this, you know. You know, trees have leaves on them. That's not a problem. Now, if you like leaves, you like that particular leaf, that's where it starts to get a problem. So the thing is you can say, yes, it's true that the person who does the activity is you know, the one who gets the benefit. But as Preetam Maharaj says, the devotional process is so great that the person who does the activity, the person who instructed in the activity, and the person who supports the activity, they all get the same benefit. So therefore, the person who raises the money, the person who gives the facility for that, and the people who help, you know, in applying the money into the devotional activities, then all of them get benefit. So then you just leave it at that.
He wouldn't.
Huh?
He didn't. He just said, he said no. it is only the one who does it.
You know, but then if that's the case, then you're dealing with the ego there. He says, great, you have tons of money, and if it doesn't get spent in Krishna consciousness, you get no spiritual benefit. In fact, you've collected the money, but the only when you get the benefit for having collected it is when somebody spends it. When that pujari that you say is useless goes out and buys flowers for the deity, then you get the credit. But until then, you get no credit. Because all you've done was dealt with economics, right? That is the second lowest class of consciousness in human beings, right? Third, means second lowest. Higher than that is dharma. Higher than that is moksha. Higher than that's bhakti. So you're dealing in economics. So it says, that's vaishya. That's on the bottom. That's ignorance and passion. So if you want to say that your ignorance and passion is superior, that's really being self-centered. But that's why the management thinks, all the guys that make all the money, they're pretty useless because they don't know how to control it and spend it properly. Right? And then the Brahmin will say, well, unless you guys have knowledge in that, you're all useless in that. And so like this, you can go on arguing eternally. So if you want to stay in the material world eternally, you keep this mentality. But the point is until your money is spent and used for Krishna, you get zero benefit. It's just like the grihasthas had the child. He can't say, now I produced a devotee. No, when the child is trained, turns 16, and is now on their own consciousness, being Krishna conscious, then you can say you've gotten the benefit. But that means 16 years, they get no benefit for having raised a devotee. It's the same way with your collecting money. So if that's the thing, then we should just have a temple. We should just have not even a temple, because then you need all these useless people to take care. You'd have to ask them, what would be the perfect scenario where you just have collectors? How would they position themselves? Because they couldn't use a house, because then someone would have to clean it, because cleaning would be below a collector's thing. And as devotees, you wouldn't want to have slaves or something like that. It would really be politically impolite. It would be bad for your collecting, right? So therefore, you couldn't have a building or a house or anything. You'd have to situate yourself kind of like in space. So does that mean that could you walk on the roads and stuff like that? But then the problem is those roads are maintained by all those useless people. So actually, you'd have to kind of function in the space, So that would mean then to really be a perfect collector, you'd have to do austerities, get the mystic power that you could fly, so you could just hover in space when you weren't actually sitting in front of somebody and asking them for money. So then that would be perfect. Yeah, then we just get rid of all these other people. But now, would the demigods be considered, the guy who would give you the mystic power, would he be considered of any value? I guess he would, because he's not just decorating or that. He's kind of controlling something. So I guess he would be. Yeah. I mean, that's what I do to them. You just take it beyond the absurdity to where you just kind of like, you just lose them.
I gotta go. That's gonna be his reaction.
Yeah, it says, yeah, great, but make sure stay away from all those useless people like that. But the point is it's a particular mentality of pride. You have book distributors, they have the same mentality. Like that. So it's very common. The collectors, they may need more facility, they'll get something like that, it's very valuable. And because of the nature of it, they need more facility, to do the collection, but also they consider that they require more because they're superior. So something more is there. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would create something more. But if they actually think that it's superior to other services, that's when it's just complete, it's just mundane, that's all. Because they happen to have a collecting ability. That's what it is. So all it is due to their karma, due to their past material activity. So they're saying their material activity is the actual cause of the devotion, and their one is real devotion and no one else's is. That's just pure, unalloyed mundaneness. Which you would expect from somebody who's a collector. Because Vaishyas aren't known for their brains, when it comes to academics and all that kind of stuff. It's not that you don't have, but the point is such a collector is not a moneyed person who would have money for long. Because you see all those who, even though they're Vaishyas, and they deal with money, that those who have actually character, those are the ones that have had, are having now, and will have money. So even that kind of mentality is from a small time. You know, if he wasn't a devotee, he'd be doing secondhand car salesman or, you know, some other stuff like that. You know.
Practice now is how not to get involved with such.
How not to get involved.
Sometimes, I mean, you enter and you regret you entered in that.
That's session. There. You know, and generally that's 3 hours later.
Yes.
Well, actually, it's 2 hours later, but you only get out after three. Otherwise, you can try, you know, other kinds of deflects. When they study that, and then they go, oh, no! You know, like that, you know, serious like that. Like that, and just leave, or... It's just this very valuable, of course, it's valuable service. It is prominent, it is special, it is necessary. Without the money, you can't go on and all that. And see, you just, in other words, you go as far as you need, speak the correct philosophy, but you only speak that much of it. You don't put it in the context. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what Shastra does. If they're talking to a specific mentality, they only talk about the topic in context of just the topic, not bigger than that. Like Shiva, he is the supreme. But supreme in the material world. Like that. So that's the thing, you know, like the example is that the guest house manager is the supreme, you know, authority in the guest house. But then he's got his boss, who's not in the guest house. Right? You know, so that's all. So like that, is to use that method.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhakti Bindu ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.